From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. And we all know that the truth will set you free. The question we ask on this show is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? And every week we deal with issues relating to mental health. And I take a more holistic approach, which means finding a balance between body, mind, and spiritual issues, and to understand the interconnection between all three aspects of body, mind, and spirit, and the need to create a sense of balance. So each week I deal with mental health issues, as I say. Tonight or this afternoon, I'm still on my evening time slot in my mind sometimes. This afternoon we are going to be dealing with a topic that I do continuously, actually, every few months or so, although it's been about 8 months since I did it, on intimacy in relationships. And I will not be having a guest on the show this afternoon, so I remind you this is a live show, and feel free to call in and either argue with me or agree with me or ask questions or talk about some problems you might be having that we can maybe help you work through on the air. The live call-in line is area code 480 in the Phoenix area, 949-1310. That's 480-949-1310. And that's if you're calling locally in the Phoenix area, or if you're listening on the internet, via the streaming audio link. It's still a toll number for you at 480-949-1310. So there's an anonymous quote that goes, "A relationship is what happens between two people who are waiting for something better to come along. A relationship is what happens to two people who are waiting for something better to come along." All of us, I think, can relate to that at one point or another in our lives, where all of a sudden we're hoping for something, and right before our eyes is maybe somebody that we didn't realize we were interested in. But when I'm talking about intimacy in relationships, we're dealing with a lot of different levels here. We're not just talking about a primary relationship, although that as human beings we all seek that kind of intimacy. Some of us are at peace with not having it. Some of us are at peace being in that kind of relationship. Some of us are in turmoil not having it, and some of us are in total turmoil being in that kind of relationship. So we're going to start by actually defining intimacy. Sandra Ray, one of my friends and teachers in Loving Relationships, her second book that goes back a long way, basically when she's talking about relationships, she's saying that we're in relationship with everything in our lives. We're in relationship with other people, whether it's a primary love, romantic type of relationship, whether it's more about siblings or parents or grandparents, whether it's relationship with friends. We also have relationship with our jobs, with our body, with money, with our environment and our home life. And very often, one exudes the beliefs we have that seems to be reminiscent of all of them. If we seem to struggle in relationships in general, it's based on attitudes we have about ourselves, about our worthiness, about what relationships are or aren't, and we tend to have similar types of relationship, whether it's chaos in our work situation or chaos at home, or peace and success in our work relationship and peace and success at home, although some people can focus more on one and have a more difficult time in the other. So when I'm talking about intimacy, intimacy is not necessarily about having a mate as much as it is about speaking the truth in all your relationships. Now, this is about telling the truth faster. By speaking the truth in all your relationships, you're more likely to eliminate barriers to love and understanding. Make sense? Of course it makes sense. If you're withholding things and you're afraid to say things, fear itself creates a lot of barriers in relationship. And the more you're stuck in fear, the less chance you have of having a really healthy, connected relationship. So to tell the truth faster to yourself, to spirit, to God, however you define your higher power, to another person when appropriate is the quickest way I know to achieve intimacy in our lives. So think about that for a minute. The title of the show is Tell the Truth Faster. How do you establish intimacy? How do you establish healthier relationships? How do you establish a greater sense of success in what you're aiming to do? It's by telling the truth, by speaking your truth. So that is the basis and the foundation. So think about a relationship you're in right now. How honest are you being? What kind of struggles and difficulties are you facing in that relationship? What is it you're not saying? What are you withholding that's keeping a sense of separation and distance in that relationship? What relationships in the past, you know, have ended or have become destructive in some way, maybe even violent in some way, because of things that were not said, because of fear that kept you stuck. Stuck from saying things that might have moved you forward, or stuck from saying things that might have allowed you to get out of what was a very unhealthy relationship for you. So possibly the telling of the truth was, this is not a good place for me to be, and this person is not really loving me, and I need to move on. Or if I speak the truth and we establish a healthier form of communication and talk to each other in ways that have integrity and love and compassion behind it, in spite of being afraid of that, then maybe we can raise the level of the connection we have here and make a success out of this relationship. So, I'm sure that there are some of you out there listening right now that are stuck in those type of difficult relationships, and I'm sure there are some of you out there listening right now that can relate to a success you have, maybe because you went to some couples counseling, maybe because both of you started reading the same self-help book and started using it as a foundation to help yourselves communicate better. But maybe there are some of you out there that really have an understanding of how honesty can really help bring a deeper and greater level of intimacy in your relationship or within your own life in general. Now, if you go to my website, which is tellthetruthfaster.com, there's one page there that has articles. And in there is an article I have called Intimacy in Relationship that I wrote actually probably about 15 years ago or more. But it still holds true. And we're going to start right now by talking about how I define intimacy. And you can get this, again, printed out if you want, if you go to my website, Tell the Truth Faster. I define intimacy as an expression of our natural desire for connection. And I'll say that again. Intimacy is an expression of our natural desire for connection. Now the key words there is natural desire and connection. Okay? Intimacy is effortless. There was a time in your life, if you can think back early enough and remember early enough, when you were in the womb, when you were just born, where that kind of connection was truly effortless. There was a sense of innocence about it. There was nothing taught to you that said this is dangerous. There was nothing taught to you yet that said, I need to step back and I need to protect myself. Okay? So if the key words in here are natural and connection, the most natural and intimate connection any of us have ever had is when we were connected to our mother through our umbilical cord in the womb. It's hard to argue with that, okay? But from the moment this umbilical cord is cut, after birth, we spend the rest of our lives searching for that kind of connection again. At the same time, we're forced to deal with the guilt and the shame that we've been taught to feel our desire for that much connection. So do you understand that? In other words, those adults that haven't been able to achieve it have a judgment on even seeking it. That having that kind of intimate connection is something most of us desire and are jealous of those that have it, based on our fear that we'll never achieve it. So there's a major guilt trip on even having desire. I mean, how many of you have been told that, you know, you'll never get what you desire? You don't deserve to get what you desire. Desire itself, in and of itself, is something shameful and dirty. Okay? Desire is natural. Desire for connection and intimacy is the most natural thing in the world, and it's effortless if we just surrender to it. Emotional traumas, abuse, and our perception of abandonment and loss all help us build protective barriers that only serve to keep us disconnected. So if intimacy is an expression of our natural desire of connection, then you can look at everything that deals with intimacy as connection or disconnection. What creates a connection? Telling the truth. Keeping the garbage out of the way. Being honest about the fears you have about life, about risking truth and love and opening your hearts, and how you use fear and other negative thoughts and beliefs you have about yourself to keep you disconnected. So our fear of connection or fear of intimacy creates a constant state of separation that unfortunately for many of us becomes a very familiar state. This familiarity tricks us into thinking that we are safe when separate or disconnected. And that's only happening because it's more familiar over time. So we become complacent with our loneliness. We become complacent with the lies that we tell. We become complacent in what we think is safety, when really what happens when we meet somebody or try to have a deeper connection with somebody we already know, whether it's family or friends or a potential mate or lover, it becomes so uncomfortable and so painful because it's not familiar anymore. So we create patterns in behaviors and relationships that keep us safe. And that safety means it keeps us alone, unhappy, and unfulfilled. I'm hoping I'm making sense to those of you who are listening to this. Okay? So intimacy is about connection and disconnection. Intimacy is about going for that natural desire. Achieving intimacy is about exploring those beliefs and fears that you've created over your lifetime, that I've created over my lifetime, to be honest with you, that keep us isolated, alone, disconnected, at the very point we really are desiring to be a part of something bigger, a part of a relationship. Or maybe it's just coming out of hiding and going for something that we really start feeling is bringing a greater sense of connection, whether it is volunteer work, whether it is getting out and participating in sports, whether it is dating on a more regular basis, whatever it is, whether it's speaking up at work so that we're noticed more and maybe achieve something greater. So all of this is about connection and intimacy. Now, if you have these fears and these beliefs, how do you maintain them? It's a vicious circle, actually, because the fears and the negative beliefs are something you've been taught. To reinforce them, you keep believing them. You keep behaviors going that reinforce the negative beliefs, like I'm not worthy and I'm not good enough. Okay? So many of us end up going to a gym because we think our bodies aren't good enough and we want to strive for something better. There are very few people who are going to a gym solely because they know it's a healthy thing to do and it's good to stay in shape. It's good to keep our lungs and hearts and brain functioning with more oxygen, to keep our muscles toned. That most of the people, if you look around a gym, think for a minute that most of the people are there in order to look better. And why do they need to look better? Because they don't think they look good enough. Why do they think they don't look good enough? Mostly because they don't think they are good enough. Now, I've had a practice doing counseling for nearly 30 years. And a lot of that time has been in Los Angeles in the Hollywood area. I've had celebrity clients, I've had models, I've had bodybuilders, men and women, who come for therapy. And most of us, if we look at some of these people, our first thought is they have it all together. They feel great about themselves, they're successful, look at those bodies, they're so beautiful, they can get anyone they want, have anything they want, they must be so successful. What we're doing is we're putting ourselves down and comparing ourselves to what we visually see, having no sense of who these people really are. My experience is many of them, like I said, are at that gym, bulking up and looking for the perfect body, and yet they look in the mirror and they don't see the perfect body. They're still comparing themselves to someone who's more attractive, in better shape. And so what's happening is a lot of these people surprise us from time to time because we think they have it all together and they end up on drugs, they end up, you know, crashing and burning, going into recovery programs. We're talking about celebrities here. We're talking about, you know, many different people. If you work under the assumption, which is a hard one for many of us, that when we go to the gym, that a vast majority of the people there who look like they have it all together inside hate themselves, think less of themselves, don't think they're good enough, don't think they look good enough, it's all about self-esteem issues. So always coupled with this developed fear of intimacy is a problem of low self-esteem. And to me, the low self-esteem thing is epidemic. Getting to the gym obviously will help you feel better about yourself in certain ways, basically because you're pumping more oxygen through, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to heal those inner wounds and it's going to heal the belief systems that you have that are negative, that tell you you're not good enough. So what happens then if we have this fear of getting so close to someone that once they get to really know us, they're not going to like us? So how many of you have that thought? I can't get too close to someone because once they really get close to me, then they're going to start seeing the things that I think and see about myself, and it's not very pretty, and they're not going to like me, so then they're going to abandon me, and I'm going to be alone anyway, so I might as well keep it that way and not risk. Not risk. Well, nothing is achieved without risk. So think about that for a minute. Think about the last time you took a risk for a positive reason. I'm not talking about the risks we do that bring danger into our lives, the risks we do that we really know in our hearts are not healthy or appropriate for us, but I'm talking about risking making a connection with somebody that we believe is healthy for us. When was the last time you took that risk? When was the last time you took that risk in the context of your own relationship that you may currently be in and spoke the truth instead of waiting for everything to fall apart? Which is why most people end up in therapy by the time a couple gets into therapy. Eight times out of ten, they're already beyond the point of helping the relationship because they've waited so long. They're now in such a state of crisis. They're in such a state of pain that they're figuring, well, let's at least try this. Let's see if someone outside ourselves can fix us. And I had the incredible experience a few weeks ago of getting a call from a new referral of a couple who are engaged and about to get married who actually want to do some preventative counseling. They want to do some pre-marriage counseling. They love each other. They want to make sure that they're laying the right foundation. I mean, this is an amazing experience for a therapist to actually have someone come in, not because they're in crisis, but because they just want to do some fine-tuning. They want to identify in advance the traps that might be there, the patterns they've experienced in past relationships that they are conscious enough now that they don't want to repeat in this relationship. It's quite an amazing experience for a therapist to really see a couple who are not necessarily in crisis but have the level of consciousness that says, we want to nip this in the bud. We want to do something to keep us healthy and connected and not wait for the crisis to show up the way so many people do when they start therapy. So I'm going to take a short break here, leave you with that food for thought. And if this thinking and feeling about the things that I've been talking about so far are motivating you to call in, the number after the break or during the break you could call is 480 area code in Phoenix, 949-1310. So we're going to take a short break here. This is Stuart Altshuler, Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, a licensed marriage and family therapist. And today, we're talking about intimacy in relationships. And if you feel like calling in and contributing to the show, talking about a problem you might be having in your own current relationship or a pattern that you know exists in your life or have some things you agree or disagree with what I'm saying, the number in Phoenix is 480-949-1310. That's 949-1310. Before the break, I was talking about self-esteem issues. Okay, and I'm talking about this epidemic of low self-esteem. And it's easy to blame parents, it's easy to blame religions or governments, and almost anything outside ourselves. But blame is not the answer here. This victim consciousness is a destructive form of abuse, as any abusive mate or parent we choose to stay with. A person who learns to treat themselves with love, compassion, and respect, I believe, will create a position in society that will invite the same treatment from others and give us the confidence to remove ourselves from situations that do not allow intimacy. So, again, it's not about mom or dad and what they did or didn't do. At a certain point in our lives, it's about getting off the blame thing and taking responsibility for what's happening in your own life. At a certain point in our lives, you know, as you get older, as you reach adolescence, as you get into your 20s and stuff, it's your responsibility to use what your life experiences have been to make your life function on a greater level. Think about that for a minute. I mean, I have clients well into their 50s and 60s who are still blaming mom or dad for the abandonment or the abuse and things like that. Now, those situations are very real to those people. But at a certain point, you have to move into whether it's a state of forgiveness, however you define it, or whether it's just acceptance that that's what happened then and that that person is not affecting your life now, and you choose not to have them impact your life anymore in that way, and you choose to move on and free yourself of those episodes, those situations when you were growing up. So now take responsibility for your life as it is today. It's nobody's fault from the past. Even if you're in an abusive relationship, yes, that person is abusing you physically or emotionally. But who's choosing to stay there? Well, I can't afford to go anywhere. I can't figure out what to do with the kids. Well, you know what? There are hotlines, there are shelters that will take you in with the children if you have children. And there are women that are abusing men. There are men that are abusing women. There's an epidemic of abuse even in gay and lesbian relationships, and people are just too ashamed and embarrassed to do anything about it. Well, you're seeking intimacy, and what you're getting is abuse. And you're responsible for the continuation of that. That other person, the abuser, is responsible for their behaviors, but you're responsible for putting yourself in a safer situation, healing the pain that it imposes on you, and creating healthier patterns for the future and for better relationships, and setting better examples if there are children involved, and setting better examples for other people who can look at you and say, my God, how he or she pulled themselves out of that horrible relationship, and look at the smile on their face now, and look at what they're able to do. In Marianne Williamson's book, one of her first books, A Return to Love, she defines a spiritual relationship isn't necessarily one in which two people are smiling all the time. Spiritual means, to me, above all else, authentic. And to me, that's a very, very important statement. She also says, and so it is that in a relationship as well, we're brought together for real work. Real work can only occur in the presence of rigorous honesty. We all long for that, but we are afraid of honesty, communicating with another person because we think they'll leave us if they see who we really are. Same stuff I've been saying. This is from Marianne Williamson's book, A Return to Love. Now, intimacy. When most people hear the word intimacy, they think about sex. They think that sex is the only expression of intimacy. Sex is one of many expressions of intimacy. So, let's talk about sex for a minute. Okay? Sex can be an expression of connection or disconnection. Any adults and maybe some teenagers out there can acknowledge the fact that their sexual experiences either create a greater level of connection, or how many of you will admit that you use sex as a way of disconnecting, maybe in a addictive or compulsive thing where sex for you is really totally separate from being connected to another human being. It's more mechanical. It's more of a compulsive or obsessive type of focus for you that really shuts you down and numbs you, just like alcohol or drugs might. Alcohol or drug consumption, food, or other ways that you disconnect. All right? Any addiction is a form of disconnection. Any addiction is a way to decrease the potential for true intimacy in your life. Sex can do the same thing. How many of you can think of a truly intimate, connected experience with someone that you really cared about or care about and can testify to the difference of that sexual encounter being more about making love than having sex? Okay? You've all, and I'm sure most of you have heard those terms used as a comparison for one another. The difference between making love and having sex. Having sex is usually about disconnection, although it can be just a very playful thing, but if that's your pattern of always just having sex, whether it's with someone you just met or somebody you've been in a relationship for years, and it's lacking of intimacy and connection, it's ultimately going to be consuming more and more time and leaving you just as empty each time. But making love can be sexual, making love can be done in so many other ways. Think of how many ways you can make love to a partner. Whether it's just looking in their eyes, whether it's giving a massage, whether it's cooking them their favorite meal, whether it's doing something really kind for them unexpectedly, whether it is just sharing a very intimate moment, you know, the old things, walks along the beach at sunset type of thing, well, that can be a very connecting thing. Whether it's sharing sporting events with one another and feeling the passion behind it and the excitement, whether it's traveling together, there are many ways of making love to someone that has nothing to do with sexual encounter. But sex can also be one way of making that intimate connection. It doesn't even necessarily have to involve orgasm, okay? Now, sex is a word that catches most people's attention. You know, it is a drive or desire that consumes a great deal of emotional and mental energy for most of us, and it is an activity most of us wish we participated in more often. And perhaps for some of us, it's an activity that already consumes too much of our time and energy. Now, even for the emotionally healthy among us, and in the healthiest of relationships, it is often the most difficult area of our lives to discuss, negotiate, and forgive. When people are coming in for couples counseling, what are the areas they have the most difficult time with? Where is the problem? Where are the problems usually reflected first and last? It's in the bedroom. It's with sexuality issues. And this is true whether it's a gay, lesbian, or heterosexual relationship. It's always the same. Okay? Money and sex are the most difficult problems for people to navigate and negotiate within a relationship. Okay? And as I said, sex can create separation, and sex can create a real sense of intimacy and connection. Okay? So, if you're thinking in terms of where sex is in your own life, is it satisfying? Is it empty? Are you having a lot of it but really not feeling a sense of fulfillment, a sense of intimacy? Are you having actually relatively little sex, but when you do have it, it is powerful and passionate and loving? It's not about quantity. It truly is about quality. Very often I have an individual or a couple that say, you know, I've been together with my partner, it's been 10 years, it's been 20 years, it's been 30 years, and we're just not having as much sex as we used to. And while in some cases, because of what we see in movies and what we see on TV and what we read and what the expectations are in advertising, people forget that our intimacy and our lives together with a partner become so entwined and can be so healthy and wonderful and loving in so many ways that sex is not necessarily the prime gauge as it was maybe when we first met and all that lust was there. Now I have it doesn't mean it can't stay there, and there's no reason why it shouldn't be able to stay there. I have a gay couple I've been counseling, and one of them is 75 and the other one is in his late 60s, and they met just a few years ago, and they've told me they're having the most powerful, most passionate, most loving sex that they've ever had in their lives. And these are two guys that have had a lot of sex in their lives, and for them to say in their 70s and late 60s that this is the best intimate, passionate sexual experience they've ever had is inspiring. I've spoken with heterosexual couples that can say the same thing. So when somebody much younger comes to me and says, you know, that there just isn't the lust and the passion there anymore, well, you know what, that tends to settle down. It doesn't mean that you don't still desire one another, but your bodies do change and the appearance does change, but when it's the heart making love to the heart, the sex is just as passionate and just as romantic. And this is important for teenagers to get also. You know, if teenagers are waiting to fall in love to become sexually active, I highly support that. But they also need to know that there are responsibilities and risks that they take if they're getting sexually active at an earlier age. And unfortunately in our society, kids are sexually active at an earlier age. And there are risks to be taken. I mean, there's AIDS and there's other STDs out there. There is hurt feelings and there are reasons for that earlier sexual exploration that are not particularly healthy. It may be because they don't feel good about themselves, or they're not getting a lot of connection and intimacy from parents and family, or there's that sense of alienation and abandonment. So they find that sex is the only way they have of feeling in their bodies and feeling desired and feeling wanted, even though it usually leaves them either in a risky situation or it leaves them feeling worse about themselves because it's still very empty and it's starting these patterns at too early an age. So whether it's a teenager listening to this, whether it's an adult listening to this, sex and intimacy are something that's very important, and setting the right patterns are extremely important. So think for a minute what it is you truly desire. Think for a minute how you want that experience to be. If you're in a relationship and there's something empty about that aspect of it, are you able to discuss it with your partner? If you're not in a relationship and you long for that human contact, until you are able to get into a relationship, what's so wrong with paying for a professional massage so that the skin hunger is being met, so that there's a sense of nurturing that's going on? What's wrong with identifying a friend to cuddle with? Okay? There are a lot of platonic relationships out there that provide a lot of the hugs and the nurturing and skin hunger and, you know, watching a movie together curled up on the couch, and they're purely friends. There's nothing sexual about it. Whether it's same-sex friends or opposite-sex friends doesn't mean that it has to lead to sex or that you even want it to lead to sex. It just means that there's a closeness that is a natural desire that all of us have. Why not turn to friends that we already know, love, and trust for that aspect of it? Why not tell the truth about it and negotiate that these are the boundaries that exist and meet those needs for one another and feel at home with it, feel right with it? So think for a moment about what it is you really seek, what it is you really want. What kind of relationship are you striving for? Write it down. What's important in a relationship? A few weeks ago, I had a friend of mine named Harley on the show, and she's just written a book called Dating Dead Men. And Harley Jane Kozak is her name. And in this novel, it's actually a novel, that part of it is that a friend of hers wrote down all the things that are important in a relationship that she's looking for, so that someone outside herself also helped her create this wish list, if you want to call it that. Personally, I've suggested this to a lot of people, and it is a very healthy thing to do. Write your wish list. What are you truly looking for in a relationship? What's important? What do you clearly say is not okay when it comes to intimacy, when it comes to a primary relationship? What about the boundaries you want to set with intimate friends? With how much honesty is important to you? And to me, honesty is an important basis and foundation for any relationship, be it a friendship, coworkers, employer, employee, family, or whatever. And that's the whole point of the show that I do here. So make that list. Make your wish list. Okay? And find out what you still have going for you in that context, what you already have, what aspects of things on that list you feel may be inadequate to actually develop. Find a therapist and go do that. Find the right books that will help you learn and understand where those blocks came from. Make the wish list. It's always a good starting place. And after you've done that, keep it where you can see it. Review it and readjust it from time to time. Okay? And be willing to meet the person who meets most, if not all, of those requirements. But don't then use it as a block to keep yourself alone and lonely. continuously because, well, that person has 8 of the 12 things on my list, so that's not good enough. Now, I totally believe that it's possible to find someone with 12 out of those 12, but this list is a guide. You may meet somebody that really surprises you. You may meet somebody that maybe has some of those things on his list, but all of a sudden you realize there are things about this person you never even thought were important. You never even put in context of what's important in a relationship. So once you make the list, keep it as a guide, but don't be rigid about it. It's constantly growing and adjusting. As you learn more about yourself, you learn more about what it is you need in your life and desire in your life, and every relationship is a classroom. It's an old phrase, but one that is still true. Every relationship is a classroom. Even if it's a single date, even if you're seeing someone for a few weeks, you're learning more about yourself, you're putting to the test new behaviors and new beliefs. If you're staying conscious, you're seeing when some of the old dysfunctional behaviors show up. You're testing being able to speak your truth. Instead of just not calling someone back, you're able to say to them, you know, I don't think this is going to work. I'm not feeling the passion, or, you know, there are just certain things about what's going on here that just don't meet my needs. To be able to say things in a loving, compassionate way so that someone's not feeling put down, and to be able to actually be honest enough to tell them why you don't want to go any further, so that it's not just you not returning their phone calls and doing the old familiar patterns that many of us have experienced or done that are very hurtful. Be honest with somebody. Let them know why you're not interested. Thank them for the opportunity to get to know them. Thank them for the opportunity to get to know yourself a little bit more through the dynamic of having 1 or 4 dates or a few months of dating. You know, but be honest. Don't pretend something's there. Don't do things with somebody that you're doing because you're afraid to say, I'm not really interested. Keep the communication open. Stay conscious. And like I said, with that list, know that it's pliable, it's flexible. You may be taking things off that list as you mature and become more conscious. You may be adding more things to that list as you mature and become more conscious. Or as you meet somebody that says, wow, that says to you, this is an aspect of someone I never even considered before, and I like this, or I don't like this. So when we're talking about intimacy, we're talking about something that is certainly an expression of our natural desire for connection. But the aspect of intimacy that manifests in our lives is constantly growing and changing. And if you keep finding that you're in the same situation over and over again, then it's truly your pattern. It's not just bad luck. And that's another reason to get into therapy and say, you know what, I've been in the same relationship 20 times. It's been a different person each time, but it's been the same relationship. And I don't want the 21st one to be the same. It's never fulfilling. It's always abusive or it's unsatisfying. But once you are able to acknowledge the fact that you keep creating the same relationship over and over again, then it's definitely time to get some help, understand what your dynamics are, understand what it is about you and your belief systems and your experiences in the past that keep reinforcing this type of relationship in your life. And like I said, how many of you have gone from job to job to job and can say the same thing about employers that you work for? Or environments, working environments, that you just keep changing jobs that end up finding the same complaints over and over again. Well, you're the common denominator. Take responsibility for that. If you're the common denominator over and over again in relationship, whether it's a career or a job, whether it's dating or intimate relationship, whatever the situation is, take responsibility, and there's no shame. In fact, it takes a lot of courage and a lot of strength to say, wow, I'm the common denominator here. What is it about me? What am I doing that keeps creating this over and over and over again? Take responsibility for that pattern. Seek the help you need to make the changes that you need to make. This is probably one of the most important points that I can give to anyone today. Take responsibility for the patterns that you keep recreating over and over and over again. See where what you keep bringing into it and get some help for it. So when we're dealing with intimacy in relationships and we're dealing with sex, when we're dealing with peer pressure, when we're dealing with anything that you have find is a pattern that doesn't work, maybe you want to pull back for a little while and say, I'm going to get some help and I'm going to choose celibacy for a few months or maybe even longer and really take a look at myself before I keep diving into new situations. I'm going to stop dating for a little while I get some help. I'm going to stop this desperate look. I'm going to stop the bars every weekend, you know, seeking, you know, somebody new. Until I know more about myself, until I'm bringing something that someone else can find really attractive because I believe it's an attractive part of me. Again, this is a commitment to dealing with your own self-esteem issues. And, you know, I know there's a lot of things out there about, you know, matchmakers and dating programs and all this other stuff, but it's still important to show up to those things. Like I said, everyone you meet is a classroom, but it's important to show up for those types of events and to attempt that type of matchmaking consciously. Consciously in the sense that you're going into it, whoever you meet, you're going to see how they represent your level of self-esteem. You're going to see in them maybe things that you don't want to see in yourself. You're going to see each time as you're doing this kind of work on yourself in therapy that maybe the type of person you are attracting in the bars or at these dating events and stuff actually are improving in the quality of who they are. Maybe you see the red flags that much faster and you say, you know what, uh-oh, here's another one. This is the same one, and I don't need to go into this. I don't find it attractive anymore. You also get a chance to test out the degree of honesty that you're willing to bring into a relationship from now on. You know, I'm not really interested, or I am interested, or this is who I really am. I'm not going to play games with you. And I want to know who you really are so we can get to the bottom of this faster and not be 6 months into a relationship and finally the truth starts coming out and one or both of you gets very hurt. So think about that for a little while. What is it? What's your purpose in doing all this dating stuff? Are you so lonely and desperate that you're going just because you hate being home watching TV at night by yourself on a Friday or Saturday night? Are you going because you think it's expected of you? Are you going because you think you're missing something out there? Well, chances are if those are the cases, then it's something within yourself that's missing. It's not something missing that you might be missing out there. It's something that you're missing within yourself. So take a breath. Slow down. There's no rush. Be gentle with yourself. Be kind to yourself. There's plenty of time. There's plenty of time. As long as you're making a commitment to your own growth, to your own understanding, to who you are in the world. Now, there are some very important things to remember in this process. And at the end of that article, Intimacy in Relationships, that you'll find at my website, which is www.tellthetruthfaster.com. And if you want to email me about any of this stuff, you can do it from that website. But I want you to hear what I wrote at the end of this. And this is from the last couple of paragraphs of that article. In the age of AIDS, all conscious human beings are being forced to examine their thoughts, feelings, and behavioral patterns about relationships and sex. Most people I know, when they finally start exploring these areas, find at least a sense of dissatisfaction, if not total disgust in themselves and their sexual and relationship history. For many, it seems easier to deny these problems and continue seeking bodies for sex and unfulfilling relationships. For these individuals, the answer truly may be eroticizing safer sex and condom use to at least save their lives and the lives of their partners. To only focus on the mechanics of sexual activity, however, is a crime against all of society and an opportunistic infection worse than pneumocystis. To me, more than anything, the most important factor in expressing a higher level of intimacy is learning to tell the truth faster. Moving through the fears, anger, and discomfort by realizing them quickly is a tool that keeps us clearer and more in present time and always connected. What I have described is beyond sex. It is making love. Sex is just one way of making love. Expressing our natural desire for connection, making love in any form, creates a sense of union instead of separation. When a person is willing to see it as such, this moving towards a deeper state of intimacy or union in one's life, it allows for a deeper spiritual connection. It brings a deeper sense of peace, a more profound sense of safety, and returns us to a familiar time of innocence, a time when we were newborn before the fearful adults around us had time to impose their limits on a child's natural connection with spirit. We have never lost this, and it is not so hard to reconnect with it. It only takes willingness to start the learning process. So I'm leaving you today with those thoughts. The bottom line in all of this is you taking personal responsibility and willingness to start the learning process. Willingness to increase your level of consciousness about your own patterns, your own fears, your own beliefs and behavior patterns that keep you separate, that keep you lonely. And if you can do that, if you could at least take that step towards honesty and integrity in admitting this to yourself and have the courage to reach out to a guide, whether it's a minister or a rabbi or clergy that you trust, whether it's a therapist, whether it's some kind of support group, whatever it is, it takes courage to do that. And so I encourage you to start that process. So we're going to close here today. This is Stuart Altshuler, Tell the Truth Faster, on KXAM in Phoenix. And I'll be back next week, same time, and I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Independent 1310 KXAM, Mesa, Phoenix.
When I get one of my headaches, every